Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and I am your host. Today's episode is, Are Elephants Vegan? No, they are not. That's the name of the whole episode. But that's not the end of the episode. We're going to get into why they are not. As always, you can find me at joyfulvegan.com, where you can find my signed books, which you can get from me directly now. You can join me in my online cooking classes over there. You can join the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, and you can go to joyfulvegantrips.com, where you can join me in my all-inclusive trips all around the world. This podcast is listener supported. So if it is something you value and you'd like it to continue and you'd like to enjoy some perks, please head over to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau to become a supporter today at your chosen level. Thank you so much in advance for supporting this podcast. It really is listener supported. And thank you for listening and for leaving ratings and reviews. It all makes a difference. We've got some great cooking classes coming up, online cooking classes I teach from the comfort of my home, and you can enjoy from the comfort of your home. We've got Pressure Cooking 101, mushroom recipes for mushroom haters and the people who love them, people who love the mushroom haters, not the mushrooms, but by the end of the class, you're going to love mushrooms. We're doing pizza, Neapolitan pizza, of course, thin style, delicious pizza. We're making also a cashew mozzarella along with our pizza sauce and our pizza dough. And we have a chocolate Yule log class coming up. We're going to be making traditional Bûche de Noël for the holidays. So go to joyfulvegan.com for those classes. And for the trips, as I said, joyfulvegantrips.com. We've got Rwanda coming up in 2022. So there's still time to join us. And you can join me in Tuscany in 2023 and in Northern Italy in 2023. And these trips are filling up. So go to joyfulvegantrips.com and do not miss out on these trips. They're just such a wonderful way to connect together with incredible people, enjoy delicious food, go to animal sanctuaries, and enjoy the countries and the people and the culture and the food that we go to. So let's get started with today's topic. Being a cat mama, one of the most common questions I get is about what I feed my cats, Charlie and Michiko, and how I reconcile being vegan with the fact that cats are obligate carnivores and need animal flesh to survive and thrive. My short answer is, I'm vegan, my cats are not. Now, you would have seen this if you follow me on Instagram. I made an Instagram reel, a one-minute video on this topic, and, you know, basically said, I'm a human being. I thrive on plants. Charlie and Michiko are carnivores. They thrive on other animals. So this episode is not about being vegan and having cats. And it's also not about the fact that humans do thrive on plants over animal flesh and fluids. It's an episode about how we talk about who and what we eat, how we talk about ourselves and other animals when it comes to our diets. For instance, calling elephants vegan or gorillas vegetarian or deer herbivores and lions carnivores, that sort of thing. So, I don't know, diet classification, if you will. And the reason I started off with my answer to what I feed my cats as a vegan is because while language isn't perfect, I do my best to use it to articulate ideas and to frame things, to frame my ideas as simply and succinctly as I can. And so when I say I'm vegan, my cats are not, right? Being carnivores, Charlie and Michiko eat other animals. Being vegan, I thrive on plants. That's about as simple as I can make it because vegan means something. You know what I mean when I say that. You know what I mean when I say cats are carnivores. Where it starts to get a little messy for me is when I hear people call animals who eat only plants, like elephants or gorillas, vegan. Or when they call friends or family members who eat meat carnivores, or when vegans call themselves herbivores. So I wanted to unpack this a little bit. I think about this a lot when I hear about how other people, how other vegans, how other non-vegans frame how they eat, who they eat, if they eat meat, if they don't. And I'm very interested in how we talk about what we eat. And so I wanted to do this episode. And when I was doing the episode on cats and carnivores and me being vegan, I just thought, I think it's time to write this episode and see if it resonates with you and share my thoughts with you to see if those thoughts resonate with you, right? So are elephants vegan? No, in my opinion, they are not. Neither are giraffes or gorillas or rhinos and hippos and cattle and horses and any other mammal who eats only plants. Now, they're herbivores. They eat only plants, right? I'm not talking about whether or not they eat animals or not. They don't. They are plant eaters. So I'm not questioning their biology. But what I am suggesting is I don't call them vegan. I call them herbivores. They are exclusively plant eaters, but they're not vegan because that's a very specific word with a very specific meaning attributed to a very specific mammal, i.e. humans. And as always, when I talk about language, please keep in mind, this is not prescriptive. I'm not saying you shouldn't say this or you should say that or you should or not use this word. That's not what I'm saying. My intention is simply to share my thoughts with you and see if they resonate with you. If they don't, that's fine. If they do, then great. If they don't, that's great because it's just another way of thinking about something. It's just another perspective and it just might not be one that you share with me. The best I can hope for is that you have something new to chew on, no pun intended, and a new way of looking at things, maybe a frame for your own way of thinking about things and articulating what you think. So that's my hope. That's my intention. So let's look at the wonderful world of words related to eating based on physiology. And let's use the word herbivore as a jumping off point. An herbivore, as you know, is a plant-eating animal. It comes from the Latin word herbivorous, which is made up of Latin herba, H-E-R-B-A, would have been herba in Latin, meaning a plant, like the word herb, and the Latin word vorare, V-O-R-A-R-E, which means to devour or to swallow. And so you have herbivore is one who eats plants, a plant-eating animal. And by the way, that Latin root vorare, it's in a lot of other familiar words, like the word I just said, devour. So that root, that verb, that Latin verb, is in the word devour. You have D-E, which means down, and then you have V-O-U-R, devour, which comes from vorare, which means to devour, which means to swallow. So to devour is to eat ravenously, meaning to like swallow down. And that's how we get that word devour. And it comes from that word vorare. You have voracity and voracious, meaning greediness of appetite, from Latin vorax, meaning greedy and ravenous, and vorare, meaning to devour or to swallow. Okay, so you've seen that root before. I just wanted to give you a little context, and that's going to be in pretty much every one of these words that we're talking about. So you've got herbivore, you've got herbivora, which is plant-eating animals collectively, and then you have the adjective herbivorous, right? And we're going to do that for each one. You've got carnivore, meaning flesh-eating, which can, of course, refer to plants as well as animals. There are about 600 species of carnivorous plants. Most of them consume insects, but some larger plants feast on little animals like frogs and mice. So we're going to talk in this episode when I talk about carnivorous carnivory. We're going to talk about animals, carnivorous animals. We're not going to be talking about carnivorous plants. If you think we should talk about that sometime, we could always do a podcast episode if it makes sense, but we're going to be talking about carnivorous animals. And so you've got carnivore, meaning flesh eating, and that comes from Latin carnis, meaning flesh, and vorare, meaning to devour or swallow. And similarly, we have carnivora, which is flesh eating animals collectively, and the adjective carnivorous. Also describing both plants and animals, we have insectivore, meaning feeding on insects, from insect. And I'm not gonna dissect the word insect, but it actually is a very interesting etymology. But you have insect plus vorare, so to devour or swallow insects. And similarly, we have insectivora, insect-eating animals collectively, and the adjective insectivorous. Next, we have omnivore, meaning one who feeds on both plants and animals, from Latin omnivorous, or all devouring is what how that would break down. And that comes from omni, Latin again, meaning all, and vorare, meaning to devour or swallow. And similarly, omnivora, collective omnivores, and then omnivorous. We even have the word locavore, which is a recent coinage, interestingly. It was coined in 2005 in the San Francisco Bay Area, and that refers to one who eats only locally grown food, and that comes from local plus vorare. So you've seen that word. You've seen that root in a number of different words. So we have a lot of words to characterize how different organisms eat, whether those organisms are human animals, non-human animals, or plants, right? So let's add a few more. We've got vegetarian, Now, we'll go with the primary definition in the Oxford English Dictionary. Vegetarian is a person who abstains from eating animal food and lives principally or wholly on a plant-based diet, especially a person who avoids meat and often fish, but who will consume dairy products and eggs in addition to vegetable foods. That's the OED definition. And then there's a secondary OED definition, which is an animal, bird, etc., which lives on plant-based food. If I were writing that, I would have said, who lives on plant-based food? But no one asked me. So the secondary definition in the OED is an animal or a bird who lives on plant-based food, right? Then you have pescatarian, a person whose diet is primarily vegetarian, but also includes fish. And then also from the OED, you have the word vegan. And this is a person who abstains from all food of animal origin and avoids the use of animal products in other forms. There is no secondary definition. Of course, there's the completely unrelated word, if you're in the OED or in the dictionary, any dictionary, capitalized vegan, pronounced vegan or vegan, which, according to the OED, is of or related to the star Vega, right? Or you also have an imagined or hypothetical inhabitant of Vega's solar system. That would be a vegan or a vegan. And many of us are familiar with the mispronunciation of the word vegan, often pronounced. There you go. Often pronounced, but it's not usually a mistake when people do it. It's just a mispronunciation, often pronounced vegan. Vegan refers to an inhabitant of Vega's solar system. So don't get those two confused. Vega, vegan, vegan, different. Okay. You can use the adjective form of vegetarian or vegan to refer to something like a dish or a product or a recipe, right? That's vegetarian. So a vegetarian recipe, a vegetarian burger, a vegan cheese, right? So that's another way to use the words vegan or vegetarian as an adjective to describe a product. But in general, while the word vegetarian can sometimes also refer to non-human animals who are plant eaters, who are herbivores, vegan really refers just to human beings who consciously choose to abstain from animal products for ethical and or health reasons. And that's why I'm saying elephants are not vegan. They're herbivores, they're plant eaters, but they're not vegan. The word vegan has to do with a conscious choice to not eat animal flesh and fluids because of a discomfort with or an aversion to them for various reasons. Elephants and other herbivores don't eat plants only and avoid animal flesh because of inclination. They eat only plants and they avoid animal flesh because of physiology. And that's what the word herbivore conveys to me, biology, not preference. And the same thing with the word carnivore. It's a biological term to characterize animals. I know plants can be carnivorous, fine, plants and animals who survive on eating other animals. All that's to say is carnivore, like herbivore, it's a biological term. It's not a term that refers to choice or inclination. It conveys a physiological predisposition, in the case of carnivore, to hunt and consume flesh, right? The physiological predisposition, the speed they have, the keen senses for hunting, as well as teeth and claws for capturing and tearing prey animals, not to mention the digestive system that enables them to digest and process flesh. Humans, we lack all of that. We are not biologically carnivores. Thus, while I might say that people who eat animal flesh eat a carnivorous diet, I wouldn't call them carnivores in the same way I would say that people who are vegan or plant-based eat an herbivorous diet, but I wouldn't call them herbivores. I wouldn't characterize us as herbivores because we're not herbivores in the way that elephants or horses or giraffes are. Like, they can't consume animal flesh at all. It's kind of freaky to even contemplate thinking of an herbivorous animal consuming animal flesh, right? Not only are they not built for hunting, they're the hunted. They also don't have the digestive system to process flesh. And actually, let's talk about physiology for a minute, because this will set the stage for our conversation about omnivores. Let's start with the teeth. Now, I have podcast episodes on the differences, the physiological differences between carnivores and herbivores. We're just going to recap a little bit here. That's not what this episode is about, but let's look at the teeth and we'll it's coming back to words again, because the large teeth of obligate carnivores make them perfect for piercing and seizing flesh and tearing apart their prey. And those teeth are called carnassials. And they're present in most carnivores, not in humans. In fact, the word carnassial comes from the Latin word carnis, which, as you know, means flesh, as in carnivore. These pathetic little eye teeth we have, these are not the teeth of carnivores. We have what we have named canine teeth, but they're not the sharp scissor-like teeth of carnivorous animals. We have flat molars, just like plant-eating animals, that enable us to grind fibrous plants. Now, moving down the digestive tract to the stomach, a significant difference between carnivores and herbivores can be seen in the stomach acids. The stomach acid of carnivores not only breaks down flesh, it also kills the dangerous bacteria that would otherwise sicken or kill the meat eater. The stomach acids of herbivores and humans are much weaker in comparison because strong acids aren't needed to digest fruits and vegetables that have already been chewed up and broken down. As for the stomach itself, carnivores and omnivores have a simple single-chambered stomach. The main difference being, aside from the aforementioned acid, is the volume capacity, right? So single chambered stomach in both carnivores and omnivores, but you have strong acid in the carnivore's stomach, and you have a much higher capacity for higher volume in the carnivore's stomach. And when it comes to the intestines, you've heard this before, the most striking difference between carnivores and herbivores is in the size of the intestines. In carnivores, the small intestine is only about 3 to 6 times the length of their body. As for the large intestine or the colon, in carnivores, it's very simple and it's very short. The small intestine of plant-eating animals tends to be very long, greater than 10 to 12 times its body length, to allow adequate time and space for absorption of nutrients. Humans, similarly. So we differ from carnivores in many regards, but we differ from herbivores as well, especially in this part of the gastrointestinal system. Herbivores are either ruminant or non-ruminant. Ruminant herbivores have a special four-chambered stomach with a unique microbial flora capable of digesting the tough cellulose found in plants. That's not us. We are not ruminant animals. We are not ruminant. We're not herbivores, right? That's not us. And we only have one stomach. One of the four compartments is the rumen. We don't have a rumen. We don't have four compartments. We have one. Now, a cow, for instance, is a ruminant herbivore. They have a four-chambered stomach. They chew their cud. They ruminate. Now you can see how we get that awesome word when you're just chewing on something. So metaphorically speaking, when you chew your cud, when you chew on something, you ruminate. It comes from this idea of what ruminant herbivores do. We don't do that. We don't chew our cud. We do ruminate in a metaphorical sense, but we do not ruminate. We do not chew our cud. Compared to the ruminant herbivore, the non-ruminant has a rather simple stomach, which has only one compartment, So ruminant animals have four. Non-ruminant herbivores have one. So elephants, for instance, they're a non-ruminant herbivore. They don't chew their cud, they don't ruminate, they don't belch like ruminant animals. And so they're 50% less efficient when it comes to digesting food, hence the necessity to evacuate 12 to 15 times a day. That actually might be us. If you think about, when I think about most vegans, yeah, that could actually, perhaps, if you're a good fiber eating vegan, maybe you can identify with that. Okay, but you can't. So you're not a ruminant, you're not a non-ruminant, you're not an herbivore, right? That's the point. We're not carnivores, we're not herbivores. Biologically, we are omnivores, meaning we have an extremely well-adapted digestive system that allows us to eat about anything that could possibly have nutritional value, as well as a lot that doesn't have nutritional value. Biologically, we resemble herbivores significantly more than we resemble carnivores. And that must be said, and I've said it in many other episodes and capacities, but it must be said because of people who insist that humans are supposed to eat animal flesh. You know, we're more like carnivores. No, we're not. We're not carnivores. But we're not herbivores, even though we don't do a very good job of taking in meat and animal products. If you look at our rampant diseases, again, check out some past episodes, one particularly on the diseases of affluence. That's a very interesting one about this topic. But what we're talking about here are the words we use to characterize each other. And the words we use to characterize our closest living relatives, the words we use to characterize the great apes, which we are part of, right? So chimpanzees, gorillas, orangutans, bonobos. Aside from the fact that some of these animals, some of them eat insects and small animals, I still wouldn't call non-human primates vegan because of the meaning attributed to the word that we've already discussed. Now, I think we have adapted to calling animals like elephants and gorillas vegetarian, and that's why I brought up that secondary definition, if you will, in the dictionary, in the OED, because I do think it's become more accepted that we call other animals or birds, other animals and birds vegetarian. So using that word for other animals, I think that's acceptable because it just doesn't have the same weight and true meaning that the word vegan does. So not only is it not accurate to call other primates and non-human primates vegan, because most are technically considered omnivores, vegan really means something entirely different. Different even than vegetarian. You know what I mean? I'm curious about your thoughts about that. It means we consciously try to live in such a way that doesn't cause harm to others. And I know that's what vegetarian means also. And for many people it did for me when I stopped eating land animals and then eventually aquatic animals. It did mean that to me, but there's just still something a little different about the word vegan. And that's why, you know, I might call a gorilla a vegetarian, even though, again, they are mostly omnivores, not just biologically, but actually, they do eat some insects and et cetera. And chimpanzees actually hunt, so they actually have meat in their diet as well. The point is, it's a word like I'm okay, like kind of using for other animals, but not vegan. So what do we call everyone? Now, to reiterate what I said in the beginning, this is not prescriptive. You can say whatever you want. You can call everybody whatever you want. But this is just how I think about it. And for me, it often has to do with public framing. You know, when I'm sitting at home or in my own mind, would I call these animals I actually wouldn't. But a lot of what I'm talking about has to do with kind of a public framing of this, right? And it's not hard and fast, and it's not always the same in every circumstance. What you might put on, or context, right? What you might put on a shirt to catch someone's attention passing by is one thing. We can be pithy and we can be playful and we can use terms as shortcuts, right? So if you have, you know, eat what elephants eat, or, we eat plants just like other vegetarian, you know, we're vegetarian like other vegetarian animals, or, you know, I'm vegetarian like the vegetarian elephant. Like, I get wanting to say that in a shortcut to like get someone to think about it. And I do think that can work, but I'm also mindful when it doesn't work, that the waters can get muddied and create distraction. The words we use can create distraction from our point. If we make a declaration like humans are herbivores to defend being vegan, it just creates an opening for an argument and a disagreement about whether or not we really are biologically herbivores, and we're not. We're just not. And so what happens is, if we're having a conversation with someone, or we just say this on our, you know, social media channels, what someone is not going to listen to is, you know, kind of the point of our, maybe we're saying this because we're saying, you know, that we thrive on plants. Maybe that's the point of our post, or the point of our statement is that humans can thrive and do thrive without consuming animal products, flesh fluids, ferments, what have you, that we thrive on plants. So if that's our point, we want someone to understand that. If we say something like we're herbivores, they might not hear the point that we can actually thrive on plants and not animal products and not have animal products in our diet. They don't hear that because maybe what they get stuck on is that you've said that we're herbivores and no, we're not. And so now the argument is muddied and the point is lost. And I've also lost some credibility. So that's why I'm bringing this up, because from a communication place, from a framing standpoint, I want to be effective. I want to be accurate. I want to have credibility. And so if we want to get our message across without creating distractions and losing credibility, that's why I think it's worth paying attention to the words we use when we talk about physiology. So how do I personally characterize all of this? Well, I would say the non-human plant eaters of the world, deer, antelope, cattle, horses, donkeys, right? I call them herbivores or even plant eaters, different contexts. I might be writing, I might be speaking, different contexts, right? Herbivores, plant eaters, depending on what type of herbivore I'm talking about. I might also call them ruminants or non-ruminant herbivores. I might call them ungulates, right? I might refer to them as prey animals, right? I might even refer to them as vegetarian animals, but I don't call them vegan. I would not call an elephant vegan, and I would not call a gorilla vegan. I might say they're vegetarian. I might say they eat vegetarian foods. I might call them, well, I would call them herbivorous. Yeah, I might call them, I might say that they eat vegetarian food, but I wouldn't say they're vegan. I wouldn't call them vegan. The human plant eaters of the world, well, they too are plant eaters. So I would say plant eaters, but again, it's context, right? But I would say they're vegan or they're vegetarian, whatever is appropriate or apropos. I might say they're plant-based. I know that that's a whole other conversation we're not going to get into right now, but I don't call humans herbivores. And I think I made this clear already. You know, I might say that we have an herbivorous diet, but that's different than saying that we're herbivores. And technically speaking, we are prey animals, though I don't know that I've had many I have had contexts where I've had to make that point, because we are prey animals, but that's another point and that's for another day. So I would call human plant eaters, vegan, vegetarian, plant-based, you know, consisting of an herbivorous diet or, eating herbivorous foods or eating a vegetable-only diet, that kind of thing. But I wouldn't call us herbivores. For the same reason I just mentioned, I don't want there to be a distraction and I don't want to lose credibility. The non-human flesh eaters of the world, what do I call them? These are the lions, the tigers, the eagles, the crocodiles, the bears, right? I call them carnivores. I might call them predators. I might call them obligate carnivores. But I think it's fun if we take a moment to delve a little deeper to understand the different categories of carnivores, the way we discussed ruminant and non-ruminant herbivores. Carnivores are in fact divided into three different categories based on what percentage of their diet consists of animal flesh. So animals who get 70% or more of their nutrition from animal flesh, from flesh, are called obligate carnivores. So we've used that when we talk about domestic cats, right? So obligate carnivores or hypercarnivores. So these are crocodiles and owls and eagles and vultures. Most wild canids like wolves, dolphins, snakes, spiders, scorpions, most sharks, and every species of the family Felidae. So lions, leopards, jaguars, tigers, and as we said, the domesticated cat. So all are obligate carnivores or hypercarnivores because 70% of their nutrition comes from the flesh of other animals. Carnivores whose diet consists of about 50% flesh and upwards of 70 are called mesocarnivores, so middle carnivores. That's the coyotes, foxes, raccoons, skunks, otters, martens, lynx, and some mongooses. Guess would be mongoose. So these are mesocarnivores, 50% up to 70%. Animals whose diet is only about 30% meat are called hypocarnivores. So not hyper, that means upper and above, hypo, which means lower and under. So hypocarnivores are grizzly bears, black bears. They would be hypocarnivores because they get their nutrition from about 30%. 30% of the nutrition comes from meat. Now, for all of these animals, by the way, the remaining nutrients would come from insects, but fungi and fruits and other plant material and any food that's available to them. So that's where the rest of their nutrients come from. And I think knowing the different types of carnivores is helpful to dispel myths and societal biases against carnivorous animals because they tend to be so demonized just for being carnivores, just for being predators. Yes, especially demonized by ranchers who, you know, have a monetary loss if, you know, a mountain lion comes and eats their sheep, what have you. But I think just generally speaking, the way we talk about predatory animals, I mean, all you have to do is look at like, you know, some of our fairy tales, folk tales, I mean, when we talk about wolves, I mean, there's a lot of stories and a lot of societal consciousness that is pretty damning when it comes to how we talk about predatory animals. And we talk about them like they're menacing, like they're threatening, like they're bloodthirsty, right? So I think framing the way we talk about them as obligate carnivores or hypocarnivores or mesocarnivores, I think that could even help them in the PR department, right? Do you understand what I'm saying, right? I invite you to go back and listen to my conversation with Camilla Fox. She's a dear friend of mine, and she's the founder of Project Coyote. And we talk about how to characterize the predatory animals in a way that doesn't demonize them. So that's why I'm bringing this up, is because I think there's a way to talk about them that lessens the perception that they are a threat. And so that's why I'm saying, like, talking about them as, you know, look, hey, mesocarnivores or hypocarnivores, they only get their, you know, they only eat 30% of their diet is from meat. The rest is from plants and fungi. And so, like, it just, I think, positions them in a way that could, again, help them in the public relations department. So that's how I talk about non-human flesh eaters, carnivores, different types of carnivores, flesh eaters, I might say, meat eating predators, I might say predators, predatory animals. And when it's accurate, I would also talk about scavengers, because they're carnivores as well. So scavengers like vultures, for instance. So those are the different words I would use to talk about carnivores, specifically biological carnivores. What about humans who eat animal flesh? I wouldn't call them carnivores, right? If I'm referring to a friend or a neighbor or a family member, I know there are people who do this, not just vegans, but I think non-vegans, I've heard them say it too. First of all, I think the problem is that it suggests that we humans are carnivores, and we're not. So even just calling someone a carnivore, if you're vegan and you want to make the point that someone you know and love eats animals and you're disappointed by that, I think sometimes I've heard characterizing that person as a carnivore in a way that is meant to be disparaging. It's meant to be shaming, right? They're carnivores. So obviously I wouldn't support shaming, but it's also, the point I'm trying to make is that it's also it's actually linking the connection in people's minds between humans being carnivores and humans being, and we're not. So that's why, it's one of the reasons I don't want to call humans carnivores, even if they eat meat. And the other reason is, as I said, it's just not true. It's just not accurate. And I would rather, you know, I call people meat eaters. And I know that I feel strongly about taking back the word meat and legitimately calling plant-based meats exactly that, and distinguishing between plant-based meats and animal-based meats. But as I have said, this is not a science. I'm not saying I never just say meat without the qualifier, plant or animal qualifier. So yeah, just saying meat eater, obviously I am taking back the word meat to refer to plant-based meats. But when I say meat eater, I think people know that I'm talking about animal meat, animal flesh, right? And so when I say flesh eater, maybe. I mean, maybe. I mean, that is literally the definition of a carnivore, is a flesh eater. But I think I talk about people in different terms. I'm just trying to think of how it tends to come out for me, because, you know, I want to be accurate and, you know, I want to be effective. And so I might talk about people who eat animal flesh and fluids rather than calling someone a flesh eater. I don't tend to call someone flesh eater, but I probably would say it that way even more than I would say meat eater, because I want to make the point that people are eating animal flesh and fluids. And I do want to not just reserve the word meat for animals. Does that make sense? For animal flesh. So I don't know, non-obligate carnivore? I don't know. So I would probably call someone who eats, I would refer to them as people who eat animal flesh and fluids. Sadly, because of our high consumption of animal flesh, I think we would definitely be in the obligate category of carnivores, which is really sad. I don't know. Do you think 70% of people's diets consist of animal flesh, including aquatic animals? I think it's got to be pretty high up there. So what are meat-eating humans technically then? I don't know. What are they, non-obligate carnivorous omnivores? That's catchy. I think we should start that trend. Non-obligate carnivorous omnivores. I like it. Now, I know there are people out there who want to use provocative terms like carcass eater and corpse muncher. I am just telling you what I hear. I do not use these phrases. I do not use these terms. But I have seen advocates use these terms because they're like, well, that's true. they are corpse munchers or they're carcass eaters. And I'm like, okay, like just because something is true doesn't mean it's effective, right? Just because it's true doesn't mean it's the right way to go about it. Like just because a phrase or a word conveys truth, that doesn't mean it's the right way to say it. Do you want to be right or do you want to be effective? And that was the whole point of today's episode. And the point is also that just because something is accurate, so to kind of spin off of that, just because something is accurate doesn't mean it's effective. Also, just because something is inaccurate doesn't mean it's ineffective. So you can say whatever you like. You know, I even just gave myself a little leeway, right? I said, well, when I say meat eater, people know that I'm talking about animal meat because it's such a common term in our lexicography, right? So I gave myself some leeway there. Just like you might say, well, people kind of know what I'm talking about if I say a gorilla is vegetarian. They know I'm not saying that the gorilla, you know, has the desire to not hurt anybody, right? So give me some leeway. I'm going to use that word. You can say that. That's fine. I still think it could be distracting. I still think vegan is not accurate to convey that. But my point is, you can say whatever you want. I just wanted to share my thoughts with you about how I go about this, why I think it's helpful to at least consider the words we use. Now I've shared mine with you, and understand that it's not just how we say something, but it's how someone's going to take it. And that's so much of what framing is about. It's not necessarily what I say, it's what the frame in their brain is set up to hear. And we've talked about this in my Joyful Vegan conferences in the past, and we can talk more about that. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you want to talk more about that? I want to hear more about framing. Tell me what you think. What kind of words do you use? Do you think this is all just a waste of time? Do you want to just say whatever you want? I want to hear what you have to say. So leave comments at joyfulvegan.com. You can leave comments on social media. You can DM me. And if you do join me for any of my upcoming cooking classes, please use the coupon code 10OFF. That's the number 10OFF, 10OFF, to give you 10% off any of the classes you join. And please go check out the pledge levels to become a supporter at patreon.com/Colleen Patrick Goudreau for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick Goudreau. Thanks for listening.